Welcome to Wednesday. It's Mailbag Day, and I'm Nation Sports Talk, along with Vince D'Addario, Sean Steyers. Hope your day is good. How are you, Mr. D'Addario?
I'm here. I'm ready to roll. It's a beautiful Wednesday outside. It's crisp. It's clean. Love it. I love the weather when I walk outdoors and at this time of year. It's my favorite time of year.
Chill in the air. It's definitely sweatshirt weather.
Oh, isn't it great? Oh,
it's great. Off and on.
Yeah, you know, it was
a little chillier a little sooner than I would have liked it.
That's fair. But it's supposed to warm up a little bit next week, so it's okay. Not going to be as cold. And today's the last day of clouds. It's supposed to be just sunny for the next like week or so. So I am on board with that. And on top of that, Sean Steyers, my grass isn't growing quite as fast. That's always a bonus.
Yeah.
It's that time of year.
Mine's I'm in between. I'm like, do I go ahead and mow or do I wait a little bit longer and hope that it's the last mow that I have to have before it's leaf pickup time?
I know. That's it. It is a tough balancing act with the leaves. You know what I mean? I'm with you on that because I bagged the grass. And so
I don't even think I did leaves last year. I think
really
it was so windy. They just blew like all over the place and I never did them.
lucky. Although my wife does a great job. She'll have the leaves done when I get home from work. Because she just can't stand it out there with the leaves. She just gets out there and she does it. She's amazing. It's great.
I'm kind of curious. Shaquille Oatmeal popped in and said, wow, I made a live show, and then DK asked him what time it is there, and he said 11 p.m.
11.
So I'm curious where you are. Are you in Europe somewhere?
Say 6-hour time difference would put him in Europe, I believe.
Yeah. Where exactly are you?
Because I think
Keel.
I want to say Italy,
Spain.
Oh, Spain. Okay, all right.
I've DK never been knows. To Spain. Kind of like the scenery.
Okay,
all right. That's a song, Vince. So
I'll see.
Sorry to throw it right over your head, right off the bat.
That's where we are. Shaq, we'll call him Shaq. Are you in the military? I assume that's a yes. I assume
he said in Spain.
Okay.
I don't know, like, unless we have air bases in Spain. I don't know if we have any military presence in actual Spain.
Or just living in Spain. Oh. Maybe he's just living in Spain. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Wow.
I know we had something in Italy for a while, it feels like, but I don't know.
I'm not up on my world politics and, you know, that kind of stuff. I'll be honest with you. So
you don't know where the U.S. has military bases located globally, Vince?
No, I definitely do not. And
I don't either. So unless, especially after, you know, there have been a lot of closures since I was in. So
yeah, unless they're not.
The place I was in is actually closed. So
unless they're talking about it on like a fake political drama or something that I would watch, I definitely do not know where our military bases are outside of America. So
you're not alone. That's just fine. Joe says he's painting the bathroom today. So good luck painting the bathroom, and we are his entertainment.
Hey,
so
glad we could be of service.
Hopefully it doesn't go. He says he does work for the Navy base in Rota. U.S. government related. So,
he's okay.
Brett. Okay. So there you go.
Beautiful. Right. That's why I love the live chat, because we can actually ask questions and get, you know, answers in real time.
Yeah. Rota is in the southwestern part of Spain. Okay.
Okay.
So it's funny because, you know, like looking at the YouTube, we can look with the different analytics on our YouTube, you know, back end page, and you can see where people are listening and
it's
watching
all
and all that kind of stuff. And it is, we have, you know, it's like might only be five, but there are plenty of countries around the world where
yes,
the good old Irish breakdown videos are watched. So
the back when we first started, and it was a different podcasting company, but you could go on there and they would actually have a map and they would show, you know, all the different countries that the podcast mm-hmm. would be downloaded in. And it was shocking to me, all the different countries where people would download the podcast. I mean, it is amazing how global Notre Dame football. I'm not even going to say how global Irish Breakdown is, although it is, but
it's following Notre Dame football.
Yeah,
obviously,
it's how global Notre Dame football is. You know what I mean? Right. So that is just amazing to me. Amazing.
Yep. Father David up in Canada. We got
a few Canadians that hop in from time to time, as they say. So I believe why is his name? It's Rocket. It's like initials and then Rocket. My brain is
someone's handle. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. But he's from Canada, because when he sends a super chat, it has CA in front of it. So
okay,
he's awesome.
All right,
the longtime listener / follower.
Well, wherever you happen to be watching / listening, we do appreciate you.
Yes,
jumping in with us. And again, it is mailbag day, so get those questions in the mailbag. We've got rapid fire later as well. So let's cue them right up. Joe Allen had the first question in here. Oof. Tonight. Biggest concern for the Georgia Tech game?
Well, for me, I think the biggest concern is if their starting quarterback is actually playing and he's at 100%. I mean, that's the biggest concern. I mean, he's a mobile guy. He can throw the ball, and you've Benjamin Morrison is out, obviously. And especially when you have a mobile quarterback and he kind of makes some things happen with his legs, you want to make sure that you're doing what you need to do up front to contain him and all that. If you let him loose with his legs, or you let him loose as far as just scrambling out and then just finding a guy late, with the scramble drill, like that kind of a thing, that always gets you a little worried, obviously. And so from just a straight gameplay situation, that would be my biggest concern is the play of the Georgia Tech quarterback.
I guess to me, it's just the depth thing, especially at corner now with Benjamin Morrison out. I think we've said all along, we're all pretty confident with the guys, at the top of the depth chart and that kind of thing. Now, they've shown their depth, obviously, at a couple of different areas, both at corner and at defensive end. But, how far does that go? If one more guy gets knocked out, what does that do potentially? So that's right. I think that's just going to be my biggest concern the rest of the season. Otherwise, I'm pretty confident. I think last week was kind of like the starter kit set going up against Ashton Daniels and Stanford's offense compared to Georgia Tech and potentially Haynes King this week. If it's not King, Pyron, I think is his name. Yeah, Pyron.
Sounds right.
Zach Pyron, because they're both mobile guys. It's like, I think that there is definitely, one, Georgia Tech has a better offensive line. Two, Haynes King, if he is playing, is a better quarterback even than Ashton Daniels. And he's got a great running back with Jamal Haynes. See, I confused which name they share. Jamal Haynes. And wide receivers are good enough, but I think that Al Golden is going to have a pretty good game plan, is my point against these guys. They might do something early, but just because they do something early doesn't mean they'll be able to sustain it. And I feel like, especially if it's the young guy, they'll be able to confuse him enough with some of the different pressures and things like that. And my gut says Georgia Tech isn't going to run wild on Notre Dame Saturday. So
Prize Picks is America's number one daily fantasy sports app with over 5 million active members. Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Unlike other apps on Prize Picks, it's just you against the numbers. All you do is pick more or less on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. Get in on the daily action with your friends and become part of the Prize Picks community today. You can now win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 correct picks. You can turn $10 into $1,000. I'm a Bears fan, so this one gets me really excited. One Caleb Williams passing yard gets you one win on Prize Picks every week in September. That's right. Only 1 yard gets you an automatic win every football weekend in September. 4 weeks of free W's. Don't miss this deal on Prize Picks, because it's gone when September ends. Think Tyreek Hill will get more than 90.5 yards in week one? Aaron Jones runs for more than 66.5 yards? Cook up hot takes with your friends and win real money this football season when you and your crew run your game on Prize Picks. Prize Picks also has college picks all ready to go for you as well. Get in before game one hits, and you can predict how many passing yards your favorite college quarterback will hit. For me, I think Riley Leonard's going to go above 2,550 and a half yards, so I'm going to take that one. And I'm going to combine it with Quinn Ewers to throw 2,999 and a half yards. Put those together and bing, bang, boom, baby. I'm going to be a winner. You just wait and see. I'm coming up on my 1 year anniversary of depositing my first $10, and I received an instant $10 bonus. If you have the skills, you can play for a shot at turning your $10 into $1,000. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code IRISH for a first deposit match up to $100. That's code IRISH on Prize Picks for a deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, run your game. You've had Wendy's nugs dipped in sauce, but have you had them covered in sauce? Wendy's new saucy nugs takes the crispy and spicy nugs that you love and turn them up to 11. Choose between flavors like buffalo, honey barbecue, garlic parm, or if you're a real heat seeker, try spicy ghost pepper only on Wendy's signature spicy nugs. I dare ya. That's 7 delicious ways to try the nugs you already love. Pick a flavor, grab some extra napkins, and prepare to nug like you've never nugged before. For a whole new way to nug, it's gotta be Wendy's at participating U.S. Wendy's. I would hope not.
And that's what it's going to take. Like, I think they'll keep them fairly one-dimensional. And I'm not going to say they'll have an easy day, but they should have a good day against them.
I think your point about, you know, depth being an issue, you know, for the rest of the season is absolutely accurate. I share the same concern. You know, I've had that concern now for a little while, obviously up front, and then now with the secondary. But, you know, specific to Georgia Tech, I wanted to be a little different. You know what I mean? You know, not just go straight to the depth, because that's going to be the answer from here on out, right? I mean, we talked about the impact of Benjamin Morrison and all of that stuff, and it's absolutely legit. And I think, honestly, I don't think it's going to impact Notre Dame. I don't think the Benjamin Morrison injury is going to impact Notre Dame until the playoff.
Okay,
that's when you're gonna feel, and maybe not even in the first round if Notre Dame's hosting a game.
I think there'll be some impact potentially in basically any game that is not against one of the two service academies.
Okay,
just because you've got decent athletes and playing wide receiver and things like that. Like if you've got, because like, are you going to rely on are those guys going to play 70 snaps a game? That's kind of the biggest question right now, because again, Gray and Moore, you've got no problems with them, but you're also going to need more than two cornerbacks. That going in, and like, they're not going to be able to play 70 snaps a game every game from here till the end of the season. And that's kind of what worries me is maybe the series where they've got to take some time off the field, you know?
Right.
So, because we're definitely, I won't say definitely, but it feels like we're going to see more of Carson Hobbs, kind of what that nickel looks like. Like, does Jordan Clark just slide out and play outside if one of those guys needs a breather? And then you have Hurd, you know, play nickel, that kind of thing. Like, I am curious to see what some of those things look like, what their plan is.
Hopefully they don't have to worry about that. I'll just say that.
Hopefully. So DJ wants to know, after the interview that I had yesterday with Chad Bishop, who covers Georgia Tech, if I think Haynes King is going to play. DJ says, seems like my guest, Chad Bishop, was on the side that he's out. And I don't know if you were able to listen to any of the interview.
I listened to the first half, I believe. Like the first third, I would say, until the you-know-what hit the fan. So at work, because I was listening to it today.
Yeah. Gotcha. And I mean, that it seems to be that was the way he was leaning.
Okay.
That because it is his throwing shoulder, and you know, they watched him in a little bit of practice. Like it sounds like kind of like the first five periods of practice kind of thing. I think we touched on this a little bit yesterday. So he didn't get to see him do a lot, you know, just kind of starting to loosen up and those kind of things and said he looked okay, but it sure sounds like there's a lean toward this is not an ACC game, and they've got two losses in the ACC right now. So, I mean, theoretically, they're still in the thick of the ACC race to at least try to get that, you know, like a number two spot in the conference and get themselves into the ACC championship game. So it sure seemed like that was the direction he was leaning. Like if he had to make the call as of yesterday when I talked to him, that he would be out. But take that for what it's worth, because the head coach is still obviously the one making the decision.
And it's funny because, you know, I'm sitting there listening to the thing, and I heard him say, you know, hey, we've been at practice and it looks like he's doing all the same stuff he always does. I was like, oh, well, I guess he's going to play. So obviously I should have kept listening so I could have gotten more out of what he had to say. I think that was like the last part that I heard was, you know, he's out there in the green jersey and he's, you know, doing everything that he always does. And I was like, okay, well, he's going to play then. So that's my expectation. So it'll definitely be interesting to see, you know, what ends up happening.
Connor wants to know, could a Jordan Travis-like situation prevent Notre Dame from making the playoffs? In this case, mass injuries rather than an injury to the star quarterback. So do you think all these injuries impact Notre Dame's playoff chances?
No, I don't, because of the timing of the injuries. I mean, there's still half the season to go. And so they're going to have plenty of time to prove or disprove the fact that they're a playoff-worthy team. Because remember, the Jordan Travis injury happened the last game of the regular season. Now, they still had the ACC championship, which they did end up winning, but Notre Dame's got six games to prove that they're a playoff-worthy team. This isn't the end of the season. Now, if more key starters go down late in the season, then maybe, but as of right now, I would say no.
That's how I lean as well. You know, again, obviously, if you get more injuries, like I can't even imagine that at this point. But I feel like where Notre Dame is right now, where they've shown up in the human polls, if they keep winning, keep doing their job, they're 11-1 at the end of the season. Honestly, I think it would be more a direct comparison to Jordan Travis. Like it would have to be something happened to Riley Leonard to keep him out of the playoff rather than, you know, just what they've dealt with so far.
Yeah.
Good question, though.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Hoping that's not the case.
Yes, exactly. From Joe, if Notre Dame goes 11-1 despite all the injuries, will Marcus Freeman be coach of the year, or will Northern Illinois hurt his push?
You know, it depends on how some other teams, you know, obviously finish up. I think there's other coaches that are more deserving at the moment. I would say the IU coach, Sigdetti, has a stranglehold on this award at the midseason point. Anybody that predicted IU would be 6-0 right now, please stand up. And there's going to be a lot of people sitting. So I don't think that, you know what I mean? Like, I think he has a, you know, a really good, chance at that. I think the Boise State coach has a good chance at that. There's a litany of coaches I would put ahead of Marcus Freeman nationally, as far
even
as
Cristobal down at Miami as of right now.
I would
be ahead of him, and the coach at Iowa State, you know, like go down the list.
There's a lot of time obviously left in the season, half of it. But I don't, even if Notre Dame goes 11-1, Marcus Freeman's not at the top of my list for coach of the year. I'll just say that. There's going to be other deserving coaches, in my opinion.
No, I agree. Some of these teams who are in position right now are ultimately going to lose. But like, let's say Indiana only wins two more games the rest of the season. They're 8-4.
Right. Then his obviously.
Well, I mean, it dips, but he's still going to be in good shape is what I'm saying. Cause it's Indiana.
Yeah.
And who expected even 8-4 from Indiana
in
his first year?
Hey, they're bowl eligible or whatever. You know what I mean? Like they're ready to go bowling already. And I don't think you could say that most of the time if you're an IU fan. So, you know, IU has done some amazing things. There's absolutely no doubt about it. And you could make a case for Marcus Freeman because he has steered the ship. Okay. So, the understanding is that they're 11-1, right? So that's how I'm going to take this.
Yeah.
Well, and that was part of the question. Yeah, he steered the ship through a lot of injuries, right? He had, you know, at least was the captain of the ship when the offense took a massive leap forward. You know what I mean? From where they were at the beginning of the season, you know, the defense still played well with all of these missing guys. So, I mean, there's a case to be made, but I think there's other coaches that will have a better shot at it than he does.
Yeah. He could at the very least be in the running, and how, you know, like how much the injuries impact, you know, like that, that's all quite honestly dependent upon, you know, when you submit awards and, you know, all those different things, like how that is framed when you submit sort of his resume, if he's still in the mix at the end of the season, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. Oh, absolutely.
Josh wants to know if Georgia Tech will be the most talented team left on Notre Dame's schedule.
Absolutely not. That would be USC still. I mean, I don't, maybe they're not going to be playing as well by the time Notre Dame gets to USC, because they've already started to hit kind of that rough patch a little bit, but they still have way more talent than Georgia Tech across the board.
Yeah. I would put Georgia Tech probably second.
I think that's fair based on who's left on the schedule.
Yeah.
I think that's absolutely fair. I think Georgia Tech probably is second, but I also think the divide between first and second is a lot wider than the divide between second and third and fourth.
Sure.
I would say that.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's only six teams left. So, I mean, I would, I mean, go
Army, Navy,
go USC, Georgia Tech. Like, is Virginia more talented than Florida State? You know, like when you
compare, no, I would put Florida State above.
You still look, put Florida State up there?
Florida State's a terrible team, but they have talent. Like, it's fair to say that Florida State is a terrible team, but they're all going in different directions. You know what I mean? Like, we've all seen teams,
I agree with that,
that have talent that suck as a team. Like that exists, right? And that could be USC by the end of the season. Right.
Is it an illusion of talent? Like, was it all just overrated? You know, like, well, is that why they're at Florida State?
Right, but they now? Were good at other places. Like, they did a pretty good job in the transfer portal from a on paper standpoint.
Theoretically, yeah.
On paper, they had talent. So I would still put Florida State right after Georgia Tech. And I think, and look, I am not an expert on anybody's roster, but I think there's probably an argument to be made between Florida State and Georgia Tech, who would be two, but they would be 2-3, whatever. And then you're talking Virginia, Navy, Army, and Navy, Army is a toss up between the two of them. So they are the definition of team, though. Army, Navy is the definition of a team and playing well as a team. But from just a straight talent standpoint, they're going to be at the bottom of these six.
Yeah. You know, again, like I'm just like you said, I'm not an expert on everybody else's roster, but I would, you know, like when you just look at the, like Haynes King was at one point, you know, like he started off at Texas A&M, you know, I believe he was a 4-star guy coming out of high school. DJ Uiagalelei was obviously a 5-star in anyone's world. Has Uiagalelei played like that?
Right.
You know, and then like Jamal Haynes, I think, has outplayed that, you know, and then again, like, you get past the top of the roster, it's not like I'm, you know, going to go deep on everyone's recruiting rankings or anything like that. But those would be the tiers.
Yeah, yes.
I guess I would agree with that. Yeah. And then obviously, you know, the Service Academy of guys are completely different question at the other end of the spectrum. So
right. But again, they're a great team, which is why they have the record that they do.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, and I completely agree with, who was it over here? Jeremy. He says teams that play well together can be more dangerous than a talented team. No question about it.
It's true.
No question about it. Seen that a million times, you know, in teams that I've had, played against, whatever the case may be. Absolutely true.
Well, but look, there's a reason that the service academies play the option offense, because it's an equalizer. Because you go in knowing you're going to be undersized, and you're going to have like, you know, ones and 2-star type guys on your roster. So you play that style of offense to equalize things and kind of help balance it out. And by definition, because it's the option, one thing goes with the next, you know, like starting with the quarterback, and is he going to give it to the fullback? Does he keep, you know, it's like all these pieces go together, and they all have to, you know, perform together. All the pieces have to fit together. So kind of by definition, that's how, you know, that offense runs. And if you're good, and you know, that's what really makes it. And obviously, they've got some. They both had good, really good play from the quarterbacks this year,
right?
As well, just in a different fashion than everyone else's quarterback. DK, if you could bring back one player from injury, who would it be, and why is it Jagasaw the only correct answer?
Well, I'm sorry. The correct answer for me is Benjamin Morrison. That's who I'm bringing back all day long. Because, look, Charles Jagasaw, we think, was going to be a really good player. But he's still a kid who has no experience. I know what I'm getting with Benjamin Morrison. And I also know that in the playoffs, Notre Dame's going to run into some really good receivers. And I would feel a heck of a lot better at neutralizing them if I knew Benjamin Morrison was covering them. So just look at his production against the three. You know, I've seen a bunch of stats out there over the last 24, 48 hours, right? You know, look at the stats of him against the guys that went 1, 2, 3 in the draft. You know, amazing, right? And a lot of times they were thrown to receivers that also got drafted high, right? I'll take Benjamin Morrison all day on that in this one.
Yeah, I mean, that's my answer as well. Because, like, what did I talk about when we were asked about the biggest concern, the depth of the cornerbacks? And that's always been my concern if you know, Morrison wasn't going to be healthy, because, you know, obviously his summer he was rehabbing from a shoulder injury, right? And that's my biggest concern right now. Like, those other guys are still really talented.
Oh, but sure.
Benjamin Morrison was still, at worst, a second round, you know, a guy who ends up being picked in the second round prior to the injury.
Yeah. So, and we all, the thing with Jagasaw, and look, it is a projection, and it is a projection based on a lot of things that we've seen from high school film and what we saw in the bowl game and things like that. But it's still a projection as to what he was going to do at Notre Dame in this season as a full-time starter. We really don't know what he was going to do. We don't. You know what I mean?
And no, we don't. But I think that we can reasonably predict that he would have at least been better than, more and more consistent than the play that they've had at left tackle.
Completely agree. Completely agree with that. I'm just, what I'm saying is,
no, I know what you're saying.
I don't think we can lock him in.
It's
as
still
an
a guy who played in one game, basically, right? And that's, we're basing right everything off that.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So
that's exactly right. Tyler Evans, thanks for the super chat. Biggest disappointment team this season. I mean, without a doubt, it's Florida State.
Yeah. Like,
oh, yeah. They were number 10 coming into the season, and they're 1-5 and almost lucky to have one right now. So, I mean, I was never sold on bringing Uiagalelei down there, and like that was going to solve everything for them. Yeah. Obviously, they needed a quarterback after losing Jordan Travis, but it's just a total disaster to go from undefeated last year to 1-5. Like, that's,
it's unbelievable.
Oh, man. I can't even imagine.
It was funny listening to you talk to the Georgia Tech writer, because he kept talking about how big of a win Florida State was. And every time he would have to have the caveat of and that was a huge win. And we
at
thought Florida State was going to be good. Yeah, at the time. Yeah, it was really funny, because it was at the time, because I'll never forget it. I was in a store, a cell phone store, and I'm watching it on TV as we're waiting, you know, for our number to be called. And I'm like, holy crap, Georgia Tech is about to upset Florida State.
Mm-hmm.
Huge, huge upset in that week zero game, right? Well, 7 weeks later, it's not such a huge upset.
Not looking that big.
No.
But again, like I said, as Georgia Tech, if you're Georgia Tech, anytime you can beat Florida State, that is still, there's still some significance, even if Florida State is 1-5 right now. You know what I mean? Because it's like Florida State, Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Turns out Georgia Tech's just the better team. It was a really close game, but Georgia Tech's been the better team, as you were kind of pointing out before.
Absolutely, they are.
Talent or not. Shaquille Oatmeal. True or false? At least two players currently starting on the offensive line are backups next year.
That's true. That's a true statement. It might even be more than that, to be honest with you, because look, you figure Jagasaw comes back, he's probably going to start. Ashton Craig, when he comes back, he's probably going to start. Gerby Lambert, although he has a chance to start next year too. The right guard. God, help me out here.
Rocco?
No,
Billy Shrouth coming
Billy
back.
Billy Shrouth, excuse me. Yeah. I mean, he's not starting right now. He's one of the best, you know, five linemen that you've got. So I'd say that's three guys that will be starting that are currently not starting, right? So it's going to be interesting, to be perfectly honest with you, because, you know, Anthony Knapp is getting all these reps. You know, Pendleton is getting all these reps and all this experience. Notre Dame's going to have one of the most experienced second offensive line in football.
Assuming they all stay, because
that's true too. That's a good point.
I think that's going to be a question, especially since they decided to, you know, I don't think that you were here when we talked about it last week, but they, you know, the NCAA decided to keep the spring transfer portal. So there's still going to be, still going to be two portals. They shortened the windows in both December and April, but they're keeping both, both dates open. So guys can still go through the spring, kind of figure out where they are in the pecking order. And I think that I would not be shocked if you see a couple of those guys potentially take off. Because, I mean, just what you're talking about, like the fact that you get Jagasaw back and you've got Gerby Lambert, and obviously you've got Emil Wagner playing, as we've talked about, the most consistent, really, of any of Notre Dame's linemen. There's obviously, and then, you know, Knapp is in that mix as well. So you basically got four guys for two tackle spots, assuming that they're even keeping Knapp in the equation.
I think Knapp needs to move to the interior. Now we'll see what Notre Dame does.
But that just buries him. Again,
sure. No, he'll be buried either way. Yeah. I think Anthony Knapp has done yeoman's work with what they've asked him to do at this stage of his development. But I do think that he goes back to being a second string guy. Maybe, you know, he backs up both guard and the center position next year. You know what I mean? Like, let's see kind of where he's at. But I'm sorry, in my opinion, I think number one, I think he's an interior guy, and number two, I don't think he's one of the best three interior guys on this team at the moment, right? And probably also into spring and into next fall. So I think if he sticks around, he's going to be a backup. Now, he's going to be one hell of a backup, but I still think he's going to be a backup because I do think Rocco's better than he is. I do think Billy's better than he is, and I do think Ashton Craig is better than he is. I think those are your three best interior linemen right now. And then tackle, like you said, it's going to be a dogfight between three guys, I think. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting.
Oh, I think so as well. Josh says he thinks Wagner starts. I do too, for the record, but I also thought that Pat Coogan was probably going to start again this year. So, you know, if we've learned nothing in these 2 years that Joe Rudolph has been the offensive line coach, is don't make any assumptions early on, because things can change. And during both camps, they did change.
Light it. Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Urban Meyer. This fall, the game changes. Join me, Heisman Trophy winner Mark Ingram, and broadcaster Rob Stone as we bring you a new perspective on football and culture every week. We will be joined by the biggest name in sports and talk about everything inside and outside of the lines. Let us guide you through a new era of college football. Watch Triple Option on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
Hey, Irish Breakdown listeners, it's Matt Leinart. I've got a podcast called Throwbacks with actor Jerry Farrar, where we'll be talking all things sports, but also so much more. We'll give you the behind-the-scenes stories from my days as the quarterback on an iconic college football team to Jerry's days as a star on an iconic TV series. So subscribe to Throwbacks on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts.
This Bub says, how is this for next year? Left tackle Wagner. I don't see them moving over there. I think they keep him on the right side because that appears to be where he's most comfortable. Left guard Jagasaw, center Craig, right guard Shrouth, right tackle Lambert.
That's a hell of an offensive line. I mean, I don't know that I would put it in that exact order, but having those five guys out there, that may be your five most talented guys, and you just found a spot for him by moving Jagasaw inside. I could see that being the case. I could.
You know what, again, like if it's trending in whatever direction during the spring, I just have a hard time seeing everybody sticking around at that point, especially guys who have become starters.
Because Rocco's got one more year of eligibility left after this year, but he's already a graduate student.
Right.
So that means he would be having a sixth year. I could see him potentially having a sixth year someplace else if he gets edged out. You know, obviously he wasn't starting at the beginning of this year. So that's a real possibility, which is why I think that five could be legit.
I think next year's offensive line is going to be really good.
Yeah. Like yes.
All of this that they've had to go through this year, I think next year's line is going to be really good. I'll just kind of, that would be how I would put it.
Yeah. I honestly like that five. It just depends on where you want to put them. I think you could be very effective with that five.
DJ, do you believe, as DJ does, that the Notre Dame offense has turned a corner?
I hope that's the case. I mean, what we saw against Stanford, I think, is a shell, not a shell. It's a building block of who we thought they were going to be earlier on in the season than they actually were. I don't like that it took six games to get here, but this is where they're at. And so I think they found the magic potion to a degree, right? Of Riley Leonard and Mike Denbrock and, you know, the play calling and what's comfortable and RPOs and all of that different stuff. And taking into account the offensive line, I mean, you notice there was a lot of quick throws, not a whole lot of five-step drops, you know, hanging out in the pocket, you know, those kinds of things, because I'm not sure that this team is going to be great at that type of thing. So it was quick throws, it was quick decisions, it was RPOs, it was things like that, and they moved the ball very effectively. So I think this is going to be more the offense that we're going to see the second half of the season.
I think so as well. And Riley Leonard just looks so much more comfortable out there, and he's looked more comfortable the last couple of weeks. And last week against Stanford just looked like a continuation of his better play against Louisville. Now, does that mean they're completely out of the clear? No. But again, like, you look at the schedule, you know, like, you listen to Riley Leonard, you listen to Mike Denbrock, and just all these things really appear to be coming together. I don't think it was necessarily opponent related what we saw from Stanford. Now, we do obviously have to see some consistency, you know, like, can they now string two full games together? Because even
right.
You know,
oh, for
like,
sure,
turn out Purdue is really bad, but obviously they look the offense looked really good against Purdue as well, and then we still saw some speed bumps afterwards. But I do believe that the offense has finally rounded that, and we're going to continue to see improved play, and we're going to continue to see some of the stuff that we thought we were going to see early in the season.
Yep.
Joe says, watching Leonard versus Louisville makes me think he'll be okay. So not really a question, but a statement. But I think that this is just kind of a continuation of what we were just talking about. Interesting that he said versus Louisville. Louisville did obviously have the better defense than Stanford.
And there were steps in the right direction against Louisville.
Yeah.
But not like there was from Louisville to Stanford. Like that was a much bigger step that we needed to see. And not only from Riley Leonard, but from the offense as a whole, right? I mean, Riley Leonard's only going to be successful in the properly called offense. And I think the properly called offense, the properly planned offense, was Stanford.
DK saying I kickstarted his confidence after Louisville with the post game questions that I have. Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah. Yep.
I don't know if he'd agree to that or not.
Well, he better get on board. That's what I say to that.
Like Salty said, he was dropping some dudes out there when he was answering those questions.
Dude.
Shannon, going back to the Louisville game, when Urlacher recovered the botched punt and tried to score, if he had lost the ball and Louisville recovered, would possession have flipped back over to the Cardinals?
If Notre Dame had possession and ran with the ball, then yes, that it would have been a first down. Because you can't, like, once possession changes, if it changes back, then it would have been a first down, crazily enough. So,
right. Yeah, because basically it, like, the downs essentially reset.
Correct.
At that point.
At least that's how I understand it.
Because possession has changed. Yes.
Possession is 9/10 of the
law. Like, if you fumble and then the team that, you know, the other team recovers and they fumble, it would have gone back in that case. Carlos says, I believe you both attend home games regularly, correct? How's the crowd noise at home? On the telecast, it seems to be kind of quiet, but I don't know if that's NBC trying to muffle it out.
I mean, here's my take. I was not at this past game, and I missed a game earlier on in the season as well. But all I can go off of was I was listening to Brian on the post-game show, and he, you know, Angela, his wife, does the photography. So she's down on the field for all the home games. And, you know, she was at the game, obviously, against Stanford. And, you know, she's got one of them newfangled watches that tells you how loud it is.
The decibels and all that.
The decibels. Okay. And she said during the Stanford game, her watch went off more from a decibel alert than it has in a really long time.
Really?
That's what she said.
Interesting.
Again, don't shoot the messenger. The problem with where we are, and it's why Brian and sometimes me like to go outside on the balcony for the first couple series to kind of get a feel for the crowd. Mm-hmm. When we're in the press box, they've got these itty bitty windows way up high that just kind of do these, you know? And so,
but they keep most of them closed. Exactly. Anyway. Like some of them are open, but
the crowd is completely muffled.
Yeah.
For us. Like we can't, I mean, you can hear them, but it's
if it gets really loud, you know it. But
sure.
That's interesting that she said it went off more during the Stanford game, because I felt like just watching the two, I would have said the Louisville game was a little rowdier, but maybe it was just certain moments, you know, like third downs more drama late in the game and that kind of stuff, you know, fourth quarter and all that kind of thing.
DK is always, it's always poking the bear.
DK likes to poke
the bear. It's going to get you in trouble.
He does. Does not mind the poke. TD4ND will Love get a touchdown this week, making it 8 consecutive games with a touchdown.
Why in the world would you bet against it at this point? I mean, he's the most versatile guy you got on your team, right? I mean, he's going to number 4. If Notre Dame is going to be successful, number 4 needs to be in the end zone. I would bet on Love getting into the end zone every single time. I mean, 8 consecutive games. Yeah. Sign him up
at this point. There's no reason not to. He barely had, you know, like by his standard, it seemed like he didn't really have that. You know, he had 49 rushing yards last week. Or no, he had 53 rushing yards last week. 39 of it came on the touchdown run.
Yeah.
So he finds a way to get to the end zone. I would bank on that.
Man, it was amazing to me on just such a simple play how quickly he got to the sideline and then up the sideline. I mean, there was a couple of guys trying to, you know, take an angle, and he just outran the angle. I mean, it was impressive.
Joe, yay or nay, all gold uniforms for Notre Dame?
I would need to see them before I make a definitive answer, but in my head, what I think of as an all gold uniform, no, that's a nay for me. I don't think that that's going to be any good.
Yeah, you think if they were going to do it, it would probably be a Shamrock Series game. Feels like they would have done it by now, considering gold is like
gold. Like,
yeah,
what are we talking about here? Like the gold pants on the jersey, like, you know,
I wouldn't mind, you know, like white pants with, you know, like gold jerseys and blue numbers, maybe something like that. Or even
I would need to see the gold
white numbers on gold. Like
a lot of ways they could mess
gold
that
up. Gold is a jersey. I mean, it's obviously not very bold.
Right. And they
like the all gold. I'm against monochrome in general, unless it's all white. I'm against the monochrome. So
I would say, you know, that like Under Armour or Notre Dame, whatever, has gone to like that shiny gold, you know, with the accents and stuff like that, you know, whether it's the ND on the arm or whether it's, you know, around the numbers or whatever. Like if you made that a whole uniform, that would be gaudy. Yes, it would match the helmets, but it would be gaudy. That's not something I would want to see. Sorry.
Better Jeremiah Love theme song. All You Need Is Love by the Beatles or The Power of Love, Huey Lewis.
All You Need Is Love from the Beatles is a little bit slow for to be the theme song of a player. You know what I mean? So I think a ballad like Huey Lewis in the News with The Power of Love for Back to the Future. Like, let's go. Yeah. I'm down with that.
Do it.
That's do a little it. More, a little more high tempo. You know what I mean? Like that's mm-hmm. the power of. Like, let's go.
It's the power of love.
That's all right? I'm saying.
Like the power of Jeremiah Love.
Yes.
Yes.
I think we could go with that one.
I like it. I don't know if he'd like it. I don't know if he'd like well, his song since it.
He's
since
probably it never seen Back to the Future
and of the 80s.
Yeah. If he ever said that out loud, it would break my heart. But I'm just gonna pretend like he does.
There's probably something more current that he would want.
Probably
if he
true.
Had the choice.
That's probably true.
Shaquille Oatmeal. How do you say the quarterback's name? Is it Hebert? How do you say his
I'm
name?
I'm not
you
know? honestly not sure. I don't know.
Hebert? Is it Hebert?
Or Hebert? I don't know.
I thought I know Brian said it the other day. I can't remember how he said it though. But anyway, a comparison for him. What made him flip? Clemson develops the position pretty well. This is a recruiting question, so I don't know what your thoughts are on this, Vince.
Didn't even know the kid existed until he committed the other day. That's how much I knew about this situation. So
right.
I am the wrong person to ask about that one. I'd have no comparison for him. You know, what made him flip? I know it was an early relationship with Notre Dame. They were on him very early. So there was an established relationship. I don't know, you know, what was the be all end all and why he decided to go away from his commitment. Cause the way I understand it is Notre Dame backed off when he committed to Clemson. So something made him commit and it obviously didn't take long for them to get him away from Clemson either. So I don't know, man. I'm not really sure. I that's a question for the big show, if you will. And I believe Friday is the mailbag for them.
There you go. TD4ND, what future Notre Dame opponent will be the biggest test for the young defensive backs? I would just say USC.
USC, yeah, because they're going to be the most offensively gifted and offensively, you know, schematic in the passing game that they have left on the roster. So, yeah, or I mean on the schedule. It's absolutely USC, and I don't think it's really all that close.
No. I would concur with that. I think that's that. That's the mailbag.